Hey, it's your boy JC. Welcome to episode 77 of the Dream 10X podcast. And I'm here with my lovely co-host,
Dr. Cable.
How you doing, Dr. Cable?
I am excellent. How are you doing?
I've been better, man. I'll tell you what, it's been a day. But you are in some undisclosed location having a good time, right?
Yes, I've been playing with fire and steel. So life is always good when you get to play with fire and steel.
Fire, steel, and snow, I hear, right?
Maybe it is snow, yes, and sunrises.
There's snow there? Ish?
Yeah.
Have you skied yet?
No, my skis are in the shop right now getting waxed and sharpened because it's been many moons. And so we're going to try tomorrow, see how it goes.
Okay. Good. Please don't break any legs.
That's the goal.
This is not acting. This is activities.
Yes.
don't hurt yourself. So for this Dream 10X episode, we're reviewing the book. It's blurry.
Oh, that's blurry.
Right.
Good.
Okay. Yeah. Come on. There we go. Technology. Golly. How to Create a Mind by Ray Kurzweil.
And I'm excited
for this. Yeah, well, this book is about technology. And let me tell you, I'm very miffed right now because this is the second episode. I paid over $650, more than that, to get a really good camera so we could improve the quality of our video and our audio and lighting and all of that. And I cannot get the damn camera, the darn camera to work with any of our Macs. So we can't use it as a webcam. It's a $650 dead weight webcam. I mean, I could probably buy a quality webcam for like $20 or something like that, but I wanted to get a good quality camera and use it as a webcam and also to record our other stuff, pictures and stuff. And I can't, it doesn't work. It's a Panasonic Luminex G7, and forget about it if you're trying to hook it up as a webcam with a Mac. Like, it just, I'm so frustrated. So technology sucks. It's really complicated. Even the simple user stuff, like, it should just be plug and play, right? It's got an HDMI cable. It's got a USB cable. All I should have to do is freaking plug it into the Mac with a USB, and it should bada boom, bada bing. I should see video, and I should be able to use it with Zoom or whatever. No, it doesn't work like that. So technology is really stupid. It's really stupid. But let's talk about how to make a brain, okay? let's talk about that, because maybe. So this guy Kurzweil, we've talked about him in a previous episode, back in December 16th, 2022. And he had written a book called The Age of Spiritual Machines. And it was kind of on the same genre of, hey, technology, Moore's Law, and computers are getting so fast, and we're going to get merged with the silicon, and we're going to become one with the universe, and we're going to be download our souls and our brains to the computers in the cloud, and it's going to be wonderful, and we're going to live forever. And so this is kind of the second evolution of all of that. And just before I get into my five key takeaways, I just want to say that I call BS all of that, because I can't even get a freaking camera to work. How are you going to get your brain and your soul and all that stuff to live in the cloud forever? Like, come on, man. That's just stupid. Like, have you ever used Microsoft Windows? Come on. It's not going to happen. You're going to get rebooted, and then you're going to be dead. Like, what's the point? But anyway, there are some interesting technological discussions in this book. And one of which was what synchronicity is? Have you ever heard of the term synchronicity? So I think that's a Freudian thing, if I remember correctly. And it's the idea that things happen in your life that are aligned. How would you put it? Like ideas or themes or a thing occurs in multiple places from disparate sources that are of the same thing and of the same meaning. And it makes you sit up and think, hey, wait a minute. Why is the universe telling me something? Because it's weird that these things keep popping up all of a sudden and from different places that are unrelated, right? And so that's kind of synchronicity. And so I've had a weird synchronistic event this past week, and I'll share that with you because I haven't told you
Uh-oh.
yet. So last week, I'm kind of like at work, if you launch Internet Explorer on Windows, it just shows up a bunch of clickbait news things, right? And they're all kind of just dumb news stories or whatever. So I was just kind of passing some time waiting for some code to build or whatever. I'm just looking through there and I see an article that looks kind of interesting. So I click on it. And the article is about some guy, let's see, his name was Dr. Melvin Bobson. And the guy is an information physicist. I've never heard about that field of research before. Information physicist, what the hell is that? I've never heard of that. But so I'm reading this article and he posits that some research that he's doing relative to COVID-19 has proven, or not proven, but made him think, for whatever reason, or come up with this theory that we are living in a simulation, and that information physics proves that somehow information is gradually becoming more constant and stable over time, which is opposed to the laws of thermodynamics and entropy, which kind of says that stuff gets more chaotic over time. The physical world gets more chaotic over time as opposed to more stable. I didn't quite understand how COVID-19 tied into supporting his theory, but whatever. The point is, the guy made the statement that he thinks we're in a simulation. Interesting. I keep scrolling, whatever, you know. I'm also at the same time, why is this
Because the black background is
tech
blurry, it has to be right in the right spot.
technology? It sucks. There it is. In this book I'm reading at the same time. So I finished it this weekend. I stumbled upon that article early in the week. And in the book, Ray Kurzweil also mentions another guy who's a Swedish philosopher. And I'm not really sure why Kurzweil brings this up. It was relative to consciousness and trying to kind of put your finger on what consciousness is. But he brings up this guy, Nick Bostrom, who also posits that we are living in a simulation. And so I'm really curious now, why do these guys think we're living in a simulation? Where does this come from? Like, where's the data that kind of proves, or at least gives them the idea that we're in a simulation? I've never heard of that before. This is like a brand new thing to me. What?
Nothing. Because I went down a rabbit hole when you sent me that stuff, and so I watched the video and I didn't understand it, so I started reading some academic articles on what you sent, and there's some really fast stuff and connected to Bateson and Bateson's cybernetics, where he really, you should read the book, by the way. It's on the second shelf down, yellow book, it's small. But it's cybernetics and that theory of information and the theory of systems and how it's all connected. And so there's a lot of parallels between Bateson's theories. And so that's really interesting because, Bateson's my guy. And then what these guys were talking about. So.
So, are you saying that Bateson claimed that we were living in a simulation as well? Or
No,
what,
when he talks
what's the.
about the whole consciousness aspect and that theory of information and how there's a lot of parallels between like the systems because it's those feedback loops and then how we adapt. But it's not just our consciousness isn't just within our heads, it's the system. The whole system is conscious and that inner that relationship between the systems. So both theorists have a more so that I forget the name of the guys. Bateson and those guys, hang on, Penrose and Penrose and Hameroff
Hammer off.
have a more holistic view of what consciousness is, and they challenge, it's like temporal, so they challenge with the time aspect of it. It's not that linear. They challenge the where it's very individualistic, it's more of a system. And so it was fascinating to me to kind of read through their perspectives, but
Interesting. Okay, so the second point that the other second thing that I kind of picked out of the book was again relative to what is con the question of what is consciousness. Was these two guys, Hemeroff and Penrose, their thesis which is that they theorize that there are microtubules in our brain. I don't even know what a microtubule is, but there's some tubule in our in the neurons in our brain that are actually doing quantum computing. Which I personally, just from a gut feel, don't think is outside the realm of possibility. However, there are critics who say, hey, most humans can't even do math, Dr. Caples included. And if our brain is capable of quantum computing, mathematics would not be an issue for us. I don't quite agree with that because, first of all, mathematics is a human man-made construct, for one. It's not a biological construct as far as we know. And so, I mean, who knows how the brain computes, right? Maybe it's like so high level abstract, math is so high level abstract or whatever, that it's just a totally different way of getting to the result that a human brain needs to get to. Who knows? I don't know, but that's one of the arguments.
Yeah, and so it's interesting, like when you say that, because they both, so Bateson and Penrose and Hameroff, so they both see that consciousness is linked to those properties of the universe. So for Bateson, it's really like us and the nature around us, and so he thinks we're intricately interconnected. And for Hameroff and Penrose, from what I was understanding, it's really those larger that they're we're connected through those quantum mechanic features. So yeah, it's fascinating, and that whole feedback loop and circular causation, they both really embrace.
Yeah, so the theme of being in the matrix in a simulation and the theme of our brains could be doing quantum computing, whether or not those ideas are verifiable fact or provable through hard data and physics and science or whatever, it's interesting that there are multiple people thinking along those lines for whatever reason. So something has triggered their scientific mind to think, hey, we may be in a matrix. Hey, our brain might be capable of doing quantum computing. And it I have to tell you that when I was a kid growing up in the Methodist Church, one of the things I thought about was, life is probably just a game where the God and the devil are like trying to see who can get the most followers from a
Yeah,
social
I can see
perspective.
that.
It's like from a religious perspective, it's kind of like a simulation. It's kind of like a game,
I see it
how many
now.
followers can I get versus, it's all about social media in heaven, right?
Yeah.
That's all it is. So when I read that, I was like, I don't have any data to support that, but I wouldn't be surprised. I would not be. And how many people have come up to you and said, "Hey, I'm one with the universe." My uncle used to say that all the time. I'm one with the universe. Like the idea of transcendental meditation or whatever to like try to connect with what's out there, and for whatever reason, just I don't know.
Jedi.
Just trying to be connected with everything out there and to under try to understand and align your spirit or whatever with everything is the
That's
thing. Like,
what when you reach nirvana, you remember all your past lives, you are like one with the universe, and when you pass on, that's it. You don't, so in Buddhism we get reincarnated, but like when you reach nirvana, that's it. You understand the world and you understand everything.
right. And so it kind of would make sense that we have some quantum computing capability, built into our biology. Who knows? I
That's
don't
so
know. I don't
cool.
know. So that was the second interesting thing. I'm like, huh, I don't know. The third thing was this guy named Henry Markram in Switzerland, who decided that he was a scientist, decided that he was going to lead the charge in creating the first computer simulation model, digital twin of a mouse brain, and claimed that he could do that in like 10 years. And then that he could, once the mouse brain was done, he was going to do the same thing with a human brain 10 years later. And that was fascinating to me, the whole digital twin concept. I totally get it. Like, how powerful would that be if you could model all of the neurons, all of the connections, all of the chemistry of the brain, Not just from a what wisdom could I get out of such a model, but how could I understand what changes in that physiology would impact certain people from a health perspective, and how could we change that from a health perspective? Much less what could we do to improve intelligence from a health perspective? So I totally get it.
That's
Absolutely fascinating. That's a great objective to achieve. However, he also made these claims, these decades. Within a decade, we can have this mouse brain. Within a decade, totally unrealistic. And because of that, the money kind of petered out because they couldn't hit those milestones. But you have to do that as a when you're shooting for you're when you're making these moonshots that nobody has any idea how long it would take to do something like that. It's like going to Mars. Hey, we are going to go to Mars in 10 years. Who knows if you're actually going to hit that, but it's the banner, right? You're leading people to an objective, and it's a big objective that humanity has no idea how to achieve. You have to put a flag somewhere, So I totally get what the guy was trying to do and trying to achieve those really hard objectives. And you got to be willing to fail, and he failed. But he did move the bar and the research in those directions. And I watched a movie that a guy followed him around for 10 years. It's called In Silico. I don't know if you were able to watch it or not, but
I haven't had a chance to watch the whole thing, but I was going to watch it later tonight.
or you can watch it with me because I already paid for it. So
Yeah, I'll watch
I
it
bought it just 10 bucks. Fascinating,
with
fascinating
you.
movie.
Hey,
It's
that
like it.
replacement. Good science.
Yeah, it's like an hour or so. It's neuroscience. You'll love it. You'll absolutely love it. It's really cool. But the primary problem with it was, even if he were able to build a fully functional mouse model, how do you prove that it's a mouse? Like, it's a mouse brain. What one guy from the Salk Institute says is the proof that when you finally spent the billions of dollars to build this thing, that the model says, "Eek."
Okay, that's hilarious.
But that's on point, right? Like, exactly. How do you verify and validate that your model is a mouse model?
Yeah.
So really, that's a big problem with the whole thing, is how do you validate the model that it's actually doing what it's supposed to do, and that it actually is a mouse the way a mouse thinks,
Yeah.
So that was really fascinating to me. That was a really cool rabbit hole to go down. Number four, John von Neumann. Very interesting genius from Hungary, physicist, computer scientist, everything. He was the first guy to draw a parallel or make a connection between neuroscience and computer science, and to say, hey, neuroscience and computer science are very closely aligned. And I thought of us because I don't know why, I don't know what you got you into neuroscience, but you've been talking about neuroscience ever since I met you. And of course, I'm a software engineer, so the two of us are always talking about those kinds of things. And that was a really interesting correlation for me to learn about. The other thing was he did so much. He was involved with Ballistic Missile Organization in the United States. He did, I mean, he was a really, really smart guy. But he died at age 51. How did he do all of these things and come up with all of these ideas and die at 51? That just boggled my mind. Like, I was already impressed.
Creator said no more. We can't have him actually finding out the secrets of the universe.
Yeah, like, oh, that's
Horrible.
sad. Prior to him, neuroscience and computer science were islands unto themselves. Isn't that fascinating?
So
And
it's very much like in academics. Only recently, really recently, have people combined different areas of study. So before it was you have biology over here and you have engineering over here, and you have this study over here, and if you combine them, oh no, we can't do that. And so this inter studies approach is really new. And so yeah,
well,
makes.
and also the whole thing with informational physics. What? So it's all boiling down to computation. Computation is like the discipline for everything now. And so one way or the other, I think whatever discipline you're in, you have to understand computation, or at least know how to chat with a chatbot, right? That's the new thing. I freaking
Nice to
hate
the
chatbots.
chatbots, and it's nice
What's
to
that?
you. Be nice to the chatbots, and they're nice to you. I've played with
I have
them.
always
Fantastic.
hated chatbots. And now it's like the big large language model chatbots. That's like the thing. Like, look at these cool things we can do with it. We can summarize text and everything. And I still hate them. I think they're just the dumb. That's not the future. But anyway, all right. Finally, well, number five. I learned that the fusiform gyrus is the part of the brain that is responsible for what? You know, quiz.
Nope, not a clue.
Yeah, what? This is neuroscience.
Not a
It's
clue.
responsible for facial recognition, the
Ah,
fusiform
cool.
gyrus. That's just a little thing.
It's a cuneiform gyrus. Is
Also,
that what you said? Cuneiform gyrus?
fusiform, F,
Fusiform gyrus. Okay.
fusiform
Hey,
gyrus.
you learned something new.
The lower levels of emotions are obviously dictated by,
The amygdala.
yes, but there are more evolved, more recent parts of our brain that also are responsible for those emotions, and those are called there's a type of spindle neurons. So this was interesting. I pulled it out. So the spindle neurons are the largest neurons in our brain, and they are responsible for higher level emotions. And so they kind of counteract what we get from the amygdala, the fear or flight, panic, whatever. Maybe I don't have very big spindle neurons. I don't know, but.
Well, the prefrontal cortex like helps to mitigate that. So when you get back in your prefrontal cortex, you could ask yourself, like, for example, when you recognize you're in your amygdala emotional state, that's fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. If you ask yourself questions, get back in your thinking brain, it's the spindles that help you get there, recognize the emotion behind it, and
Yeah. A little bit more about spindle neurons. There's 45,000 thereabouts of those neurons in our right hemisphere, and there's about 35,000 in our left. So there's a diff. There's a
I didn't
diff
know that.
between the two hemispheres for whatever reason. That's a little tidbit. Also, I found interesting, or what, so those are the five takeaways, but one of the things I kind of contemplated during this whole thing was that emotions play a huge role in how we develop our neocortex. And our neocortex is the new rind of our brain. That's what does all the logical thinking. That's the piece of the brain that most people want to replicate in software, hardware. They want to create that logical piece of our brain in a computer to make that computer, better, a better thinker, a better doer. More respondent to data, better responding to data, and not so reactive to a logical programming type of program. So it can learn and can react to data. And that's what we're trying to model with the machine learning and the AI. It's the neocortex. One of the problems I see with that is that we're not developing also that emotional response into our emergent ML and AI technologies, because those emotional responses are critical in helping to form our learning. And in the machine world, I think that's especially important because you don't want a cold calculating machine making decisions based on a cold calculation. There needs to be an emotional, the checks and balances going on relative to what is important in the human world, in the real world. And so I just thought that was an interesting thing to contemplate.
So it's interesting too that you bring that up because, okay, and also talking about the spindle neurons has their different numbers on each side. So there's studies on when they, so the corpus callosum connects both sides of your brain, so your left side and your right side. And they've done studies when that's cut on people who, and then have been able to block one side or the other. And each side will have different reactions and responses to a question. It's fascinating. And so, like, so we're divided brains, and the corpus callosum helps to bring that together and those connections. So I'm curious, like, are they going to have to build an emotional side of a brain and build some sort of connection between the two? Because our responses are wildly different. I want, it's an experiment I want to try on myself. Obviously, my corpus callosum is intact, but I think there's ways to replicate it, and so I'm really fascinated by that study.
Well, my understanding is that we have our right hemisphere and our left hemisphere are actually two different brains, and they're there because it provides redundancy. And then if you take one hemisphere out, we're still going to be us. We're still going to function as us. And yeah, that corpus callosum, if you cut that, then the two can't communicate and kind of mediate between one another. But there's that still, depending on what data input is going where, is what decision you're going to make, and the two can't communicate. But if you take one out, you're still you. So I think it seems like it's just a redundancy feature in case you lose one. But
On where you're processing information now. So if one side is damaged, like the dude had the spike in the eye, and how his personality changed.
yeah.
One side is damaged. Yes, you can still function, or you learn how to function again, like stroke victims, but you may have differences in your personality because it's not that connection that you had before.
Well, I mean, the guy with the spike in his eye, there was other damage as well. But if you were just to take one out, I think you'd still be you. You just don't have that addition. So not only is it a redundant system, but it's also an enhancement. I think it increases your intellectual ability because now you have like a master slave kind of thing, like trying to figure out what are the best decisions to make. And without that, then you don't have that. It's kind of like a male female, almost like you and I, when we try to agree on a decision, it's you and I bouncing a thing on, or an idea or whatever, and we try to come to an agreement on what the best solution going forward is. I think it's kind of the same thing going on in an individual's brain with the two hemispheres, maybe.
Was there four people in our relationship then?
At least. At least four. All right, we'll stop there with this. That ends our episode 67 and talking about blurry book. Oh, there it is. Clear. How to Create a Mind with Ray Kurzweil. This book came out in 2013, 2012, 2013. So it's been out a long time, but a lot of good thinking and from, a lot of points to ponder in that book. So it was pretty good from that perspective. But I don't have any faith in technology whatsoever. Don't put me in the cloud, put me in the ground. That's all I got to say.